Hello and welcome back. Hey everybody, this is your host Charles, and you are listening to the Bringing It All Back Home podcast. Coming at you today with another analog review, lens review. This one's all about another Leica M mount lens. But it's not from Leica. No, this one is from the good folks at Casina, the Voigtlander Apolanthar 35mm f2 spherical lens. Very interesting lens. Really happy to finally test it out this morning. And I think I'm going to break up the podcast into two different parts. So the first part's going to be just going on about what I just experienced this morning using the lens. Second part is actually looking at the photos, because I was able, I'm off today, to drop them in to a little bit of Rodinal stand development goodness. And I'm using FP4, so they should be dry, ready to scan very, very quickly. They're probably dry right now, but I figure I would at least let it stand and dry for at least 2 hours. So yeah, I'm going to do this first part and then cut back in with some of the results. So yeah, I'm going to have a sip here. I have some nice hot green tea right now on this very sunny, but a little bit cold morning here in South Jersey. And yeah, very, very much looking forward to taking a look at this lens. So yeah, if you guys have been listening to some previous episodes, you may remember I did one last year, the season 3, covering the Casina Voigtlander version of the Apolanthar in 50mm configuration. Now the 50, I really liked it. I like it even more now. You know, a lot of times the first impressions of the photos aren't always the most revealing. Sometimes you're expecting maybe too much from the photo. You don't necessarily see exactly what you were expecting. But yeah, those photos have aged just a little bit. And the last time I looked at them, which was fairly recently, I think in the last month or so, I had a chance to go through that roll. And I was like, yeah, wow, these look... In fact, I had that really nice thing where I do this thing where I'll throw my favorite pictures from a roll into a PDF. So in Lightroom, I'll just take my 5-star pictures, go to print them, even though I don't have a photo printer. And I'll click save as PDF. And sometimes I will save that PDF, of course, to my desktop. Sometimes I'll label it, but sometimes it's even better when I don't really fully label what it is I'm looking at. And that way, when I go back a month or two or more later and I just open up that PDF, I can just get a nice, more spontaneous and natural reaction to the photos and see if they jump out at me. And that's exactly what had happened with the roll I took with the 50 version of the Apolanthar. I was really, really impressed with the things that I tend to like. So, yeah, the year's rounding out, and I want to take advantage of the lens rental stuff, because this is typically where you're going to get a couple more promotions during the year, especially beginning in the fall and as we approach the holiday thing. I got another one from those guys, and I planned ahead, and I really wasn't sure what to rent, but I'm like, yeah, let me try the 35 version of the Apolanthar. And that's what I did. I got it in, let's see, today is Tuesday, so I got this in on Saturday. I was not able to use it because I was at work. Sunday was a complete weather, you know, just no way was I going to use it Sunday. It was just completely full of rain and gale force winds. Worked again Monday. So yeah, this morning I was able to take it out for what I like to do in the morning, testing out a lens or just going for a photo walk. What works for me, which definitely worked this morning, was the sun came up. You know, it was an actually sunny morning. I was able to confirm with the website I use called timeanddate.com, and that will show you exactly what the altitude is that you're looking for. So the altitude this morning, the time I was looking for this morning coincided with a 6-degree altitude. It was at 7:46 a.m. So that was the sort of official start of the golden hour in the morning, 6 degrees. I got out there maybe 5 minutes earlier, you know, and began my walk in the direction of just looking for the great light, looking for the sun. You know, and what I'm looking for, which I feel more and more fortunate every year, what I'm looking for is typically where the sun is hitting something mid-century around where I live. So mid-century, of course, anything from the 50s, even anything into the mid-60s is pretty cool, mid-century. I will definitely even begin to admit I have a kind of nostalgia now for even some weird early 70s weirdness around here. There's one or two buildings that I'm assuming are early 70s that definitely have an interesting appeal. And just before I started the podcast this morning, I realized there's an actual term for the extra little ingredients, which I do see around here, which are part of my building, and that is the concrete blocks that they used often. I have a little note here. Where did it go? Here we go. The concrete designs that were done mid-century, these concrete blocks, also known as breeze blocks. So I actually joined a Facebook group just a couple minutes ago concerning breeze blocks. But yeah, I've got them right here in my building. My building is from 1963, and it's the breeze blocks. It's these concrete blocks that surround the garage just adjacent to my building, which were also built in 63, the original, and they still have that funky, you know, mid-century vibe. And I happened to discover a whole new sort of hidden wall, concrete wall this morning of an apartment building right by the bay around here that I always recall from when I was growing up in the 70s. It's looking kind of funky, this is a lot of longer tangent, but a lot of what survived mid-century around here when it comes to the motels and the apartments have been butchered. Like, they're still standing, but they've been butchered, like, completely. They're any charm that was mid-century has been just destroyed, even though the building's still up. So, yeah, this one particular building this morning, I'm like, hey, cool, you know, I'm yelling out loud to no one. The blocks, the breeze blocks, were really cool, really, really nice. So it's like just these last little glimmers of mid-century fun, you know? Anyhow, yeah, that's my mid-century morning tangent so far. But yeah, those are the ingredients that can make a really fun walk for me. I don't have to walk that far. So basically, I follow the sun down the stairs of my building. I'll often look for shadow combinations. And I just sort of keep following where the sun, that beautiful morning 6-degree altitude sun, is striking something of interest. And ideally, yeah, it's mid-century-ish or 70s at the latest. Part of me always wonders, like, what I would do if I was surrounded by absolutely nothing mid-century around here, like that, if there would be, which is, you know, not that hard to imagine because a huge chunk of the town I live in no longer has anything left from the 50s. But yeah, part of me just wonders, you know, like, what would it be like in a place where within a 2-mile radius or three, whatever, however far you'd like to walk, there's nothing but architecture from the last 30 years, you know? What would that be like? Because, like, I'll keep going on this mid-century architecture tangent, but, you know, when you have beautiful light and you want to have fun working with your film, whatever, your medium format film, your 35mm film, you've got beautiful light, you're ready to, you've got a fresh roll. You want to test out something new about the roll, the lens, or you just want to get comfortable again with that camera. You got nothing particular in mind, but you've got great light. And then as you walk around, all you're seeing is architecture from the last 30 years. Yeah, it's a bummer. You know, it's just not good. It's just not good. I don't want to, you know, use the word eyesore, such a cliche, but yeah, so much of the modern architecture, or what you would call 21st century architecture, is all just function. It's just, you know, the interiors probably look great. The interiors of these homes and these buildings probably do a great job of conserving energy and you know, are great use of more modern materials and blah, blah, blah. And meanwhile, when you just stand outside them with a great camera and a great lens and beautiful light, you would never want to take a photo of it because it just kind of just does nothing for your eyes. It just does nothing. It just is so boring and uninspiring. So yeah, there's my tangent into 20th century architecture versus 21st century architecture versus mid-century stuff, back when people had a sense of fun, you know. Mid-century architecture is just so much more interesting, in my opinion. Anyhow, I don't know how I became a mid-century architecture snob. This was never planned. It really has to do with my morning photography, I guess. Getting back to the lens. So, yeah, the lens is on my Leica M4. What do I notice about it? Number one, it's a little bit heavier than the 50. It sticks out a little more than the 50. I kind of knew this was going to happen just by looking at the lens. And, yeah, you know, it's not the most appropriate size for an M mount. You know, it borders into the kind of length that you'd expect to be using maybe a 90 or a 135, you know. For the fact that it's a 35 millimeter lens is a little odd, you know, that it is that it projects so much further out. It is really, though, not overboard in that respect. So it comes, I think it comes right up to the point where you might go, wow, is this a little too big? But I think it just misses that point. So it's not crossing over into, I'm going to reject this thing out of hand because of the size. But, you know, a lot of the other Voigtlanders out there, of course the Leicas, that goes without saying, are way more in line with what you'd expect for an M mount lens and the feel of it and how it doesn't, not just, you know, sticks out to a bit far, but of course with that sticking out a bit far, you're losing 10, 20. I saw one reviewer on YouTube claim it was taking up about 25% of your viewfinder. It's definitely noticeable on some of the compositional shots or scenarios I had this morning, where part of me was, I guess when I was shooting vertically, let me just put it up to my eye right now just to kind of recap that experience. When I'm shooting vertically, the bottom left corner, you know, would be a little bit, more than a little bit, just out of my sight. Like I would just have to hope that there wasn't any particular object in that last bottom left corner that I'm going to suddenly see when I scan my photos, going like, oh, why wasn't I aware that there was something really stupid in that bottom left corner? Because you know, if I had known about that, I would have recomposed it. But those are minor. It really is minor. You just take your camera away from your eye for just a second. You should be able to see what you're looking at, and then put it back in front of your eye, and you can account for that tiny bit of the corner that's being blocked. So yeah, I would say feel and handling, not a big deal. Not a big deal. Not a big deal at all. What also was very, very enjoyable as I walked around this morning, and basically I'm walking around on a fairly cold morning. It felt like it was around 28 or 29 degrees. Luckily, not too much wind. Beautiful, beautiful sun. Had the camera just around my neck. Was wearing a kind of a down jacket with a hood, so really the neck strap wasn't even
kind of making any kind of pressure on my neck. It just felt beautiful. It felt very, very comfortable. In my jacket pocket, I have my Luna Pro F, light meter. And just like I was saying, I think a podcast or two ago, essentially I was just changing around mostly two stops. I was kind of like at 125 F8, or I might be at 250 F8, or maybe the sun was reflecting off of something much brighter, and I think I was at like 500 at F9, but those are my three areas for the majority of all my pictures. One exception when I was sort of backing away into the shadows where this really cool old car was parked. Then I was taking it down to a completely different f-stop. Majority of my shots were between F8 and F9, and then flipping mostly between 250, the occasional 1/500th, and I think when I first started, I was at 125 because it hadn't really gotten that bright out yet. So what did I really love about the lens? Well, number one, I could just really appreciate the focus throw. These Voigtlanders, Apochromatics, these Apolanthars, they're built really solidly. The focus feels terrific. Changing the f-stops, feeling those little clicks, really, really responsive, really, really well made and well designed. So that, I was just talking about the last episode how much I appreciate the fact that my M4 has this very, very bright and uncluttered viewfinder. So now I've got a 35 on there, of course, and it's almost completely uninterrupted. I mean, technically, there are these four tiny little points indicating where a 135 would be, but they're so unobtrusive. The focus throw is just beautiful. It's really, really easy to, of course, align my shots and get my focus in, and I felt an instant kind of vibe with the lens. Like the minute I had it, from the very first, I would say from the second shot on, it just felt like completely natural. There was no real adjustment period in any way. And again, I'm coming from a much smaller Voigtlander, which I did purchase a year ago. I have the 35 Nocton, the faster, smaller Classic 2 version. So when I'm looking at this one, because it is the competitor to the much, more expensive Leica, I'm looking to see, is this got a little bit more of an interesting contrast? Is this have a little bit higher resolution? Is there a difference in sharpness? And just in general, do I like the feel of the lens, even though it's a little heavier? And of course, it's a little more obtrusive. So the walk went just really, really well. I was having a great time with it. Part of me was a little bit, apprehensive that the walk wouldn't really do anything for me because it's such familiar ground. But no, not at all. I managed to find a whole new mid-century concrete wall or breeze wall. I did take a slight detour down a part of the road around here that I normally don't go on. And part of me was like within 20 minutes was going, I'm going to need to look up how much this is going on eBay and how much this is going on B&H, et cetera, et cetera. So and let's take a look right now at that. That might be an interesting way to go. I did take some screenshots. So let me see if I can just bring up those screenshots again. So Voigtlander, Apolanthar 35 F2 spherical lens. Currently, it lists for $1,149, I don't think it ever sells for that high a price. Typically, you're going to find this guy at maybe $1,100, maybe $1,050. I'm seeing it right now on my version of B&H for $999 brand new. So $1,000. I'm also seeing it on eBay with a pretty wide variety. There seems to be one or two Japanese sellers who just keep flipping through these with various degrees of pre-ownership. Some, like the one I saw this morning, literally was saying it has scuffs on it, you know, which is kind of rare for Japanese stuff. Users are like, it's always mint. No one's ever touched it. And yeah, I've seen those start at around six something or other. And then as you get into the more near mint and mint version from Japan, they're typically as high as 800. So yeah, 650 to 800 used, a grand new. So kind of, you know, in that territory of like, it would be great if this was even cheaper used. And that's so it's obviously an in-demand lens. Not only that, but it's temporarily out of stock right now at B&H. So I guess the holidays do bring out that that lens desire, the need to go out and maybe update what you got. Portlander, Apolanthar 35 2.0, you know, it's still something now I've saved on eBay. Because part of me was like, well, maybe I should just sell, you know, the Noctom 1.4, flip that, and use that toward one of these guys, you know. I haven't even seen the results yet, but I just like it. Like, something about this 35 makes me feel like I'm going to see something just a little bit extra when it comes to that thing that I'm doing, shooting in the sun, mid-century architecture, shooting between F8 and F11. Maybe this is going to bring to the table just a tiny bit more of that sweet resolution stuff, maybe even some micro contrast. Who knows? I'll find out in just a minute or two. It would be silly not to at least describe the lenses, why this lens is so popular and what it's aspiring to. This is definitely an aspirational lens, you know, a budget aspirational lens. Leica, at least since I think 2021, has been doing a 35mm f2 a spherical lens. They're Leica Apo Summicron M, you know, and that's at a deliciously outrageous price, you know, that like just, I'm looking at the screenshot right now and it blows my mind. It absolutely blows my mind how much this Leica lens costs. So this Leica lens, again, this a spherical apochromatic Apo Summicron M 35 F2 is $8,000. Technically, it's $8,295. And of course, you can't forget, at least here in Jersey, that would be over $500 in tax. So yeah, once you add up the tax, you're looking at close to $9,000. So yeah, just an outrageously expensive lens. So this is what it's aspiring to. Now, according to a lot of the reviews, where they're really putting it to the test with color film, or of course running it on the latest Leica color cameras, your M10s, your M11s, they do notice differences that it does have a slight, a bit of vignetting, and that the control of the chromatic stuff isn't as perfect as the Leica. We already talked about the size. The Leica, of course, is much more compact, a lot smaller. But supposedly, you know, the things it does well, the sharpness, the resolution, the contrast, is pretty amazing for what this lens is trying to do. So yeah, I think at this point, covered a little bit about the feel, how I like basically this lens just impressed me right off the bat just by just taking it on one single shoot. What I'm going to do is take a little breather, get those shots out of the scanner, put them through, and wrap this up with a little bit of a conclusion on how my first take on the images went. Okay, so I am back. And part two is here. So I've developed my role. I've done my processing. The images have been scanned. I've thrown what I think, at least at the first glance, my 4 and 5 star picks into Lightroom. I have it up in a grid. And yeah, I mean, not to get all, you know, too in depth about it, but I'm very, very happy with them. Thumbs up all the way. What I was looking for,
was, I guess, just number one, a different look than my current 35. That's the Noctom 1.4. Definitely do see it. Again, this is the first roll, just shooting FP4, a bulk roll developed in R09 or R09 Rodinal, basically stand development. What I'm definitely seeing is just it has a more modern lens look. So my previous or the current 35 that I haven't sold, and I'm not so, I guess the big question is, what would this first experience be, you know, getting me tempted to sell my other one? I'm not sure yet. I think that this definitely has a more modern look. Makes sense. You know, the Apo Lanthar is not necessarily leaning on the let me go all vintagey on you. I think that does have a tiny bit more of a clinical look. Very impressed, though, with how it handled the morning light, how it handled the highlights especially. It has a kind of glow. I don't know if it has that magical micro-contrast thing, you know, like which I just saw recently because I just developed a roll of my Leica CL Summicron 40. I don't think it has that, you know, that micro-contrast magic, nor maybe is it quite trying to. I don't know. But yeah, I think I'm very happy with it. I don't know if I'm blown away by these pictures yet. Again, this could also be that first impression thing. I know when I shot the 50 Apo Lanthar, I was very happy with it. I was glad I rented the lens. I wasn't exactly swayed when I was about to return it that this needs to be something I'm going to aspire to on eBay. Kind of feeling the same way right now. I see in the results with the 35. It's not exactly jumping out at me to go ahead and maybe switch these lenses out, jump from the classic Nocton version 2.1.4 to this basically double the price Apo Lanthar F2. One or two of the shots made me go, oh, this is quite nice. So at least two of the shots, the ones that I guess, especially this one that's not really in direct sunlight, I'll throw a link to this one. It's another one of the old cars that's hanging out at the parking lot here at Chuck Fry's garage around the corner, more or less. That one made me kind of go, oh, that's what I'm looking for. Yeah, that one has some really nice tones, and I really like the way it treated the highlights especially. But I gotta admit, when I look at some of the other ones, it's all very, very good, but it doesn't quite give me that Summicron-y vibe that I've been spoiled with lately when I, like I said, have gone into the R system or what I just shot with the M mount on the Leica CL. So yeah, definitely a thumbs up. I would definitely encourage people, if they are looking for 35, to give this guy a try. Maybe what I'll do is go out with another, like maybe I'll do an A and B possibly with my 35 just to see my, meaning the Nocton. Maybe I could do a Nocton versus Lanthar comparison because maybe I'm, you know, not quite getting the full picture because it's, you know, it's just one random morning with great morning light. But I don't know. But yeah, that's a wrap. The roll came out great. The negatives look great. They scanned just beautifully. I also have another roll of film that I also just developed now of just something from one of my other cameras, my Pentax ME. So I haven't had a chance to even glance at them yet. But yeah, analog combo coming under a wrap here. That was, again, using the
Leica M4, my version, which I had mentioned on last podcast, when I purchased it, had been CLA'd by Sherry Crowder. And just by sheer coincidence, this is her number one most recommended Leica. I know that seems to come up quite a lot. There's a current Reddit thread out there by a guy who's shooting a digital Leica, asking what's your opinion on potential alternative to the M6 if you weren't going to go into M6 land. And not many people threw out the M4. For some reason, it kept landing on the Canadian sequel to this, M4Ps, M4IIs, I guess, whatever. And especially, for some reason, a lot of folks still hammering on about the M3, the classic M3. I don't know. It just seems like there's definitely those different categories, you know. Like today, I especially appreciated the quick loading. You know, the quick loading is just such a breeze. It's so nice. It's so nice to be able to just change roles on that more modern system with Leica. That's one area where if I did ever get a chance to shoot with the M3, not sure how I would feel about the classic system of having to remove, you know, the cartridge and all that stuff. But yeah, the bulk loading of the Ilford FP4 has been going just terrific. Really happy with that choice. Great winter investment, as it were. My apartment gets so freaking dry, and once the heat comes on and the rain is gone, I did actually purchase, you know, one of those little gizmos that shows me the humidity, and yeah, it's pretty much coming up saying dry, you know. Humidity is under 30-something percent now, or under 40. I try as best I can with a humidifier to get it back up, but yeah, the minute my apartment gets super, super dry, certain films are notoriously difficult to work with. Because they will do that weird curving thing where it becomes a pain to actually scan the film, which is so wonderful about FP4. It dries really quickly. I could have scanned these guys in less than an hour if I wanted to, and it dries flat, perfectly flat. So I'm still using a classic V550, not the best for 35 millimeters, still kicks ass for 120 film. And I love the laziness that is the semi-stand, you know, Rodinal 1 plus 100. So it's just really sweet. I absolutely love it for 120 stuff. Today, part of me was like, do I really want to use this on 35 millimeter? And yeah, the results are great. The results are fine. It did not in any way come out, quote unquote, too grainy. They just look great. They look great. But it doesn't quite have that D76/ID11 extra sweetness to it. You know, that's where I, you know, sometimes using that combo, FP4 with ID11, it just emphasizes a little bit more of a lyrical quality, I would call it, you know, rather than just all the grain without any obstruction. But yeah, I absolutely love it. There's something just so wonderful when you have a morning off of work and you can just get started processing the film where you know all you have to do is shake it maybe 3 times, 5 times, and then it's out of sight for 30 minutes. You know, I can just work on something else, do anything else that occurs to me for those first 30 minutes. And usually there's stuff that needs to be done, or you just want to do something on your day off. And then, yeah, I set a little timer, you know, and after 30 minutes, I do one agitation. And again, back to other stuff, whether it's reading the news, having another cup of coffee, just taking care of something more interesting. And then finally, you know, once the full hour's done, I don't even bother any kind of stop bath. I just run some water through it maybe once, head straight into the fixer. And once I'm done agitating the fixer for five, you know, doing maybe 20 seconds each minute for 5 minutes, that gets, you know, bottled back up again. Let some water run on it, you know, for 10 or so minutes. Put it in some solution, some photo stuff from Kodak, the little soapy stuff, and it's ready to dry, you know. And yeah, FP4 is just such a pleasure. That's pretty much my analog combo. Bulk roll, Ilford FP4, using a rod null, which lasts forever, in a semi-stand, you know, 100+1 solution. And then today, yeah, just trying out a new 35 Apo Lanthar F2. It's weird. I feel like while I was actually shooting with the lens, my enthusiasm for it was very, very high. I just sort of felt like, yeah, this thing feels great. I bet you I'm going to be really impressed with the results. But once again, you know, this could just be one of those little bit too high expectations. I may look at these pictures 4 or 5 months from now and go, holy crap, these pictures are just way above what I would normally expect. They definitely are at another level. Who knows? But yeah, I would describe them right now as a very good, you know. I'd put them in the, you know, if I had to give this guy a number, I would put it like out of 10, maybe a 7 or 8 for what I'm looking for. I'm just, again, a sucker for the classic Leica Summicron micro contrast thing. You know, I'm a sucker for when it just has that slight glow in the highlights and this indefinable, not necessarily a sharpness, but the idea that your eye can just be taken up with detail in so many areas of the image. That's what I think I'm most attuned to. But yeah, gotta love Cassina for trying this stuff. I love the fact that it's such an aspirational lens. They're trying to appeal to the everyday user who absolutely would never feel comfortable walking around with an $8,000 M-mount lens. Anyhow, that's today's episode. Hope you guys are having a good day, and I hope that this winter is treating you well as it kicks off. I know we're technically going into the solstice pretty soon. I believe that's on the 17th this week coming up. So we'll be fully in there, and I'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for listening.